This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Punch in the face, direct honesty around the way I was doing things, and that really flipped the switch for me. If you have a monopoly industry, you don't have innovation or you don't have incentive. Trying to commercialise it in Australia is quite complicated, and that I know that people bristle when I say that.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, number 48. Welcome back if you've been here before. Thank you very much for joining us again. And if you haven't been here before, this is your first time, then welcome. Anyway, where have you been for the last 47 episodes? So now, this week, we're going to start with a disclaimer, and you'll understand why when you hear it. The interview today is with a client of mine. So I want to make that clear that we are clients. This isn't a promotional opportunity for them. It's a genuine interview because the gentleman and the business that we're talking about are very, very interesting. They have also recently sold their business to a NASDAQ listed company in the US, which was announced after this interview was recorded, but before I've recorded the introduction, if you can follow that, because I sure as hell can't. But anyway, we're going to talk to a gentleman by the name of Charles Cornish, who is the CEO of DoseMe. And DoseMe is a piece of dosing software that makes dosing medicines a lot more accurate. And misdosing medicines is quite a big problem, especially in the US market. So this piece of software should and does save lives. So it's a very, very significant piece of software. It was created by a gentleman by the name of Rob McClay, who we talk about as well. But yeah, look, it is a fascinating interview. It also just so happens that Charles Cornish happens to coach football at the same football club that I used to coach football at. It's a small world, as we discovered. But as I say, he is a client of ours. We have known him for over 6 months now. We have helped them in their progress and their journey. We're not going to talk too much about that because, as I say, this isn't a promotional episode for them, and it certainly isn't a promotional episode for us. But I think you'll find it extremely interesting anyway, especially about his beliefs and how to be a better leader and all those kind of bits and pieces. So make sure you listen through to that. Now, also remember to rate and review us on iTunes. And also, if you wish to come and have a chat with us, then you can do hello@simondell.com or www.simondell.com, or come and find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you wish to engage with us. We will be happy to talk to you. So that's pretty much it. Oh, and the final thing is, you may not pick this up from the interview, but Charles is actually the first interview that I have done face to face. With the help of Gilberto, the podcastboss.com, and all his equipment. We actually sat in one of Charles's meeting rooms in their office, and we did this interview face to face. So actually, believe it or not, for the first time in 48 episodes, this is the first one that I've done face to face. So there's that as well. So a few firsts in this episode. But listen, without further ado, please enjoy the interview with Charles Cornish. So, welcome to the show, Charles. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Simon. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. As I would have said in the introduction, this is quite exciting because this is the first time I've done one face-to-face. So, it kind of feels a bit
awkward.
I don't know. Yeah, awkward, strange, weird, all those kind of things. So, currently CEO of DoseMe, can you give us, to the non-medical, uninitiated people out there, a quick explanation of what DoseMe actually does?
Yes. So DoseMe is clinical decision support software.
Right.
So it's used by physicians or healthcare professionals in their day-to-day activities when they're making decisions around dosing of complex drugs, primarily in the hospital setting, but also where infusion bags are given in the home or in infusion centres.
Right. Okay. And I've seen the list of these drugs and I've never heard of any of them prior to meeting you guys. What sort of drugs, like, you know, what are these drugs used for?
The reason why you probably haven't heard of them is because they're used in the acute hospital setting.
Right.
And you may not be conscious when they're being given to you. And often, as you know, the doctors are in such a hurry, they don't have time to explain what the drugs are that they're giving you.
Okay.
That's why you haven't heard of the drugs before, but they are antibiotics, they're glycosides, they're some of them are chemotherapy drugs. And these are drugs which sit within what's called a narrow therapeutic range. So they vary the way they respond to the patient or how the patient responds to them significantly, depending on the patient's pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic profile.
That's a lot of long words.
It is, yeah.
And I guess I think that the interesting thing for me when we first started talking about this is that that misdiagnosis of drugs, certainly in the US, is a massive issue and causes it. Something like it causes more deaths than I can't remember the statistic. But.
Yeah, there's a statistic that came out that adverse drug events, which is, it caused in the hospital setting, is the fourth largest killer of Americans.
Wow.
Now, if you then peel that back even further, 75% of adverse drug events relate to dosing. So we're addressing that problem.
Okay. Well, saving lives as well as everything else.
And having fun doing it. That's our motto.
So a couple of things again for everyone out there. Dose Me is an Australian company. Been around 3 years now. Started by Rob.
Yes. Dr. Rob McClay.
And I guess this is probably one of the interesting things is, why is Rob not the CEO and why are you the CEO?
Rob is a scientist and a researcher.
Okay.
And he could very well be the CEO.
Right.
I think what happened was the investors at the time were looking for someone to take the pressure off Rob and tripped over me. I am not a scientist or a researcher.
Yeah.
And so it was either not me or I take the role of CEO.
Yeah. And that's a fairly sensible decision that a lot of business owners don't really think about, is that sometimes the creator of the business isn't necessarily the best person to grow the business.
Yeah, and Rob didn't have a commercial CV, if you like.
Right.
He hadn't run businesses before, whereas I have.
Yeah.
And I've had experience in the healthcare space. Yeah. And to be honest, Rob's an easy guy to work with. So it was an easy decision for me. And Rob also doesn't have the type of ego that a lot of founders may have where they need to be in control of everything.
Right. It's obviously been going for 3 years. There's a couple of things that I think are really interesting about the business as it stands. Number one is that you guys have a very long sales cycle, or you can have a very long sales cycle. Explain why that is and like how long it might take from, you know, point of meeting someone to actually signing a contract.
Yeah. And a lot of people think, well, it's because it's a difficult product to roll out into a hospital. But the fact is that a hospital that wants to use DoseMe can literally turn it on inside of their hospital and be using it within 2 minutes.
Right.
So it's not a hardware rollout. It's not a training, it's not a culture, it's not a change management problem.
Yeah.
It just relates to a decision that needs to be made within a very large organization where they're caring for people.
Yeah.
So there's that risk element. Hospitals are rightly risk averse.
Yeah.
They don't want to make decisions that may risk the patient at all.
Yeah.
And it's even harder for early stage businesses where they don't have big brands to fall back on. And individuals are making these decisions. And if they make the wrong decision, their jobs could be at risk in much the same way that patients could be if they don't make the right decision.
Right. So that long sales cycle, and again, when you talk about people that sell things like software and those kind of things that do have those long sales cycles, how do you keep someone engaged in that whole time? Because, you know, I'd imagine that even during that sales time, you might see that, you know, people leave a hospital or, you know, new people come in, you might have to start all over again.
Yeah, we do. And that does happen from time to time. Fortunately, with the software that we've created, when we were building the solution, we focused heavily on two elements. One was the science And the other one was the user experience.
Right.
So when you're building software that has a glorious user experience, and our friends over at Xero, they have a similar attitude where they're making accounting beautiful. We want to make clinical decision support beautiful.
Right.
And our primary user is a pharmacist. So what would happen is pharmacists all of a sudden start using DoseMe, and it just makes their lives just so much better.
Yeah.
So we have that energy, which provides energy, enough energy for these early adopters or these people that know that the sales cycle is very long to continue to fight for it.
Right, right. Is it a challenge? That's a silly question because I know it must be, but is it a challenge you guys being an Australian-based company when the large portion of your marketplace is in the US?
It was originally.
Right.
It was originally. We did a couple of things very well looking back. We set up a small base in Houston at a place called the Texas Medical Center, which Trade Investment Queensland introduced us to. And we set up a hot desk in the Texas Medical Center, which has 18 hospitals that are all as large as Royal Brisbane or Royal Melbourne or all of these larger hospitals. So what we had was automatically an assumption by a lot of the US hospitals that they didn't think we were an Australian company. They thought we were based out of the Texas Medical Center.
Okay.
Until they heard our accents. Yeah.
I was going to say, again, experience sometimes has been that if the Americans don't feel that they're buying from an American company, that they're a little bit standoffish. Did that happen, or was that?
No, we didn't feel that at all. I mean, deep down, Australians, the US regards Australians and Australian IT and IP and health very highly.
Right.
And if you couple that with some of the amazing and hugely successful creations in the healthcare space that have come out of Queensland Health and some of these other things, Dr. Ian Fraser, and some of these things which are world renowned.
Yeah.
There's really not a risk factor for them. And, you know, on the other side, which no one really appreciates, is that we're memorable because we have an accent.
Yeah.
So it does work in our favor, which is fun. It's fun to go in. They remember you as the Australian guy.
And you've got the cuddly koala.
We do.
Things that you're giving out.
We do a lot of cliche stuff. Like when we sign up new customers, as long as it sits under the US anti-bribery guidelines, we send them Tim Tams.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and we haven't been arrested yet, so we think we're pretty comfortable with that. We send a little cuddly teddy bear.
We're
still trying to find ones that aren't made in China, but we'll get there. But it does work to just be a little bit softer and a bit friendly when we're dealing with people that are really day in, day out, dealing with really stressful situations.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that when we started working together, the challenge was that getting people to trial the software itself was a challenge because they had to go through an onboarding process, a vetting procedure, all those kind of things. And we sort of turned that on its head now so that there's a free version of the software that people can play around with. And I've written about this and I've expressed many times that the ability for people just to come in and play with something and see how it works is what people like to do, you know. How has that made a difference in terms of bringing people on before they had to go through all that process?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was when you and Matt came in and really just kept belting me around the way. Like I had, as I said before, I was really passionate about science and the UX.
Yeah.
But I was protective of that science and the UX to the point where no one was enjoying the UX.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you guys coming in and just continually breaking me down to the point where I was comfortable.
That's how we work.
Yeah, it was comfortable with the world being open and available and the world being able to access our software without us putting up all these protective barriers. Well, what happens if, you know, a future competitor has a look at it? What happens if they know about our pricing? I was overly protective. And now that you've convinced me and we've gone full circle, it's liberating.
Like
we have our prices. Nobody in our space selling any health technology or anything related to do with health puts their price on the website.
Yeah.
It's almost like a no-go.
Yeah.
You know? So we sort of really went back to your advice, which was open it up. What have you got to lose?
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we've gone from if we were getting inbound leads of maybe four or five a month or four or five a week of inbound requests for trials, which we would then make it incredibly hard to buy, because we had to find a time that they'd be happy to get a demo and a trial, and we were just making it really difficult. The way that you've helped us build it, and we put a bit of work behind it, we're now getting 40 or 50 a week, which are able to do it all on their own, and they're self-qualifying as well. Yeah. So we're not spending a lot of time on customers that realize it's not right for them right now, or they don't have the budget right now. But those that do get to the next stage, they're ready to buy. Yeah. And it's shortened our sales cycle, which we were thinking was between 12 and 18 months, to between 6 and 12 months, and in some cases, 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's been a journey of, I suppose, I hate using that word, by the way, but it's been a really enlightening process to give up on that, you know, that confidence of, well, my product's so good.
Yeah. You kind of automatically think, well, it's so good, people are bound to knock down doors to get to us. But, you know, the reality is that unless people try things, they often don't even know it's there.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I was using I used the example of MailChimp the other week, and you know, MailChimp is pretty the default option now for everybody doing emails, and its theory was, let's just get everybody in the world using MailChimp. We don't care how, you know, if we give it away for free to start with, we get everybody using it, but everyone will know the brand MailChimp. Then we'll layer in the, you know, the cost elements that they've got to do this and spend this amount of money. And that's where you get 1%, 2%, 3% upgrading. And all of a sudden it becomes a ridiculously profitable business. So I think to me, it's, you know, get that pharmaceutical world out there, everybody using the free version, because naturally the knock-on effect will be that a percentage of them start to upgrade.
And it's interesting looking back on it. I had a three-pillar strategy for success. One was creating awareness, so people were aware that we had a solution out there. They're aware that the problem existed. They live it, breathe it every day, the pharmacist, but they weren't aware that there was a solution. And then the second piece was, we had to ensure that they had access to our solution, which was back end stuff and making sure that people can access it. And then the third one, which was a 1 to 3 year strategy, was around user uptake.
Yeah.
And the user uptake was the piece that we were really struggling with. Yeah. And it was because we'd made it so hard.
Yeah.
We'd actually made it really hard for people to use us.
Yeah.
And as I agree with the MailChimp example, is that you get people using us, then the commercial opportunities they're thrown in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of other things. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was your Throatscope, which are you still involved with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Passively.
For those that may or may not remember it, because I actually remember it from Shark Tank.
Yeah.
It was on Shark Tank. Did it get funded on Shark Tank?
The television version it did.
Yes. Okay.
It got a deal on Shark Tank.
So again, for everyone listening that's not in Australia, this was the Australian version of Shark Tank, and not the, which are fairly similar, but obviously different personalities, different sharks and things like that. Explain what Throatscope is, because it was when I saw it on, I was just like, that's cool as fuck. You know, that's pretty innovative. And it was a single lady came up with it.
It was a mother of four in Newcastle, a lovely lady by the name of Jennifer Holland.
Yeah.
And she had a young child, and I can't remember exactly what her child had, but had some problem where something to do with the doctor, GP, the family doctor, always had to stick the wooden tongue depressor down the child's throat.
Yep.
And the child was gagging and was constantly having to watch her child get upset by this process of a wooden tongue depressor. Yeah. The doctor didn't have two hands, so she'd hold the kid while the doctor had a torch. And she, just like we all do, went, God, there's got to be a better way. So she went home and she just designed a better way. And she created an illuminated tongue depressor. Single hand. And I tell you what, if you ever, anybody listening to this, ever wants some advice or direction around how to take a single idea and just never give up.
Yeah.
And just she has got more energy. She's an amazing woman. So, and that's what it is. It's an illuminated tongue depressor. They're now sold in over 120 countries in the world.
Wow.
She's moving on to digital health, so telehealth.
There's a couple of really cool things around, I think that Dr. Chris Brown was doing an oral examination on a koala, and you need the free hand, so the and it's used in third world countries.
Yeah.
And now there's a telehealth app where the visual is there for the doctors to have a look at the throat so they can diagnose throat illnesses.
How did you get involved in that then? Where did you, find you or?
No, so the way it worked was Jen had gone on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And as a result of the advice from Shark Tank, she was actually recommended to find someone that had healthcare commercialization experience.
Okay.
And we had a friend in common and we were introduced that's how it came about.
Is that where you met Mr. Baxter, or did you meet him through that? Because was he the one that invested
in it? He did the deal on TV with Jen, and he was the one that gave the advice that said, "Look, go and get some more muscle, not muscle as in muscle." No need to laugh.
No, come on.
you need to build out your team. You're a one man show or a one woman show, and you're very impressive, but people find it hard to invest in a single person with a single idea.
Yeah.
And so as a result of meeting Jen and spending some time with her, she asked me to get involved, and which I did, and another chap did as well. And we helped Jen rebuild an offering to the market in terms of a financial or investment offering.
Yeah.
And also help with the commercialization. And on the back of that, we then went back to Steve Baxter and pitched to him. And I suppose on the back of that pitch, he had already invested in DoseMe, asked me to get involved in DoseMe.
Okay. So a lot of the stuff that you've done, pretty much most of the stuff that you've done has been medical based.
Yes.
How did that all start? Was that something that you were focused on when you kind of left university, or
no,
just sort of fell into it?
Yeah, I had been doing mergers and acquisitions in Brazil for an investment bank.
How did you end up in Brazil? Go off on a tangent there.
I did what most chartered accountants do when they finish and get chartered in Australia. They go off to the UK to take jobs from English people who don't like to work after 4 p.m.
And then we come back here and do it the other way around.
And so I went over there, and actually on the way over, I did a little stint of snowboarding in France, and I just was amazed by all these people speaking two languages.
Right.
And that was it. And so a little guy from Brisbane hearing all these languages, so it was amazing. And so when I went to London and started working in banking there, I just had this desire to go on work somewhere where I could learn a language.
Okay.
So I went to one of those global recruiters, and I said, I want to do corporate finance in a foreign language. And at that time, the internet had just come up, the recruiter said, look, we've got a job we've got an opportunity for you in Brazil.
Yeah.
And I then went back and searched Brazil, and the search engines weren't so great at that time. And all I sort of came up with was that they had soccer, they had beaches, and they had beautiful girls. And, I was living in London, and they had the soccer.
Yeah, they don't have the beaches.
And there's lots of beautiful girls in London.
You've got to know where to look.
That's the challenge. And so I thought, well, what have I got to lose? So 3 months later, I was living in São Paulo, Brazil, and that's how I ended up in Brazil,
Wow. So what then, what brought you back? You're surrounded by beaches, good weather, and attractive women. What made you come back we came back to Sydney, didn't you?
To Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
I had to make a decision. Life was really, really good in Brazil. I had a lovely girlfriend who's now my wife.
Right.
And life was really good. And I thought, if I stay here any longer, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So I had to make that decision. And at the time, I thought, if I do want to have a family, I probably would prefer to have a family in Australia.
Right.
So my now wife and I wanted to come back to Australia. So and we wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I took a year and a half off and did an MBA full time.
Yeah.
And I did that in Melbourne. And so at the end of that MBA, I didn't really still know what I wanted to do. And a drug company did a pitch at one of the careers seminars, and I got picked up And worked for Eli Lilly at the time, which is a major drug company out of the US. And that's how I got involved in healthcare.
Right.
Although I had done some deals in Brazil, buying and selling certain health-related businesses, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. Moving sort of more onto the actual roles that you've done, there's been a lot of managing directors, CEOs, senior roles. What's the biggest challenge in that leadership role for you? Be it CEO, managing director, any of those.
There's probably two areas. One is I struggle to manage teams where people come to work just for a salary.
Right. Okay.
And so I think that's one of the reasons why I've migrated towards health.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, most people who work in health, there's an intrinsic reward element where they're not just doing it to get their salary. They're doing it because they know it's making a difference.
Yeah.
So I struggled with the clock in, clock out employees. Yeah. I wasn't very good at managing those types of people and getting the best out of them.
Yeah.
So that was one hard element. So getting into DoseMe is really easy from that point of view, because everybody here, they just are 120. You've seen.
Everyone's excited by what you're doing.
To answer your original question, the other challenge that I've had in that role of CEO or director or what have you is that, the direct investors and or other board members don't necessarily appreciate the people element. And so there's a misconnection between, or a gap between, a financial investment and the fact that it still comes down to people to deliver that.
Right.
And they're the two areas which I struggle with. And so as I choose my career steps, I try and ensure that I've got a board or a investment team or whoever it is, or a chair, that is as closely aligned with my principles around respect for people and getting and making a great opportunity and a great place to work for people.
Right. When you look for people then, and you say, obviously you're looking for people that are passionate about what they're doing and not necessarily that you know, the clock in, clock out. How do you find that? How do you, because that's hard when you sit in front of someone and you've got like an hour to interview them. And, What are some of the signs or things that you might ask people, or, you know?
I ask the questions that recruiters who sometimes sit in the room with me would cringe at. I actually ask them what the candidates believe is work-life balance.
Right, okay.
I ask them what is a hard day's work. You know, I really get into that side of things.
Yeah.
And it's not so much to make them feel uncomfortable, but to actually appreciate exactly their mindset as it relates to it. And for example, DoseMe, because we're around the world, we might have calls at 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And if an employee isn't keen to get up at 3, no one's keen to get up at 3 in the morning, but is prepared to do it, and then doesn't punish the organisation for the next 3 weeks because they did it, then, you know, that's not going to work for us. Yeah. So I don't know if I've answered.
No, it does, It's people that understand the necessity of taking an extra step when an extra step needs to be taken, and then not whinging about it for, you know, as you say, for 3 weeks after.
And look, there's no need to, I mean, we're very flexible here. If someone's done a 3 a.m. shift, I hope they don't even come to work, because it's no use in having a cranky bear at work.
It's funny, because then I've seen other organizations where it's run in the other way, where it's expected to be clocking in and clocking out, and I did one where I lasted 3 months, and it was, you know, everyone was clocking out at 5:30, like on the dot. There was like no ifs or buts about that, and I was sort of going, I just kind of want to go home at 4 o'clock and, like, you know, and have a swim in the pool, and I'll do some work this evening, and, you know, is that all right? And it was kind of, that was massively frowned upon. Mm. I'm not doing any less work or, you know, I completely get that sort of sentiment. That in terms of, so going back to the CEO role, what are the bits then? Okay. So you found that the bits that are a challenge, the bits that you still struggle with, what are the bits that are easy for you?
Oh, it's so easy to reward people.
Right.
Gracious, like I read something around people are happiest when they get given something that they're not expecting it.
Right.
When they're not expecting it. If they work really hard and you give them $10, or you give them a day off, that they were expecting that. So it's like, I deserve that. So that's okay. It's giving them things when they're not expecting it. It's just so much fun. I mean, it is amazing. And every staff member here gets stuff they're not expecting on a regular basis. Yeah. And I very selfishly, I love the feeling of knowing that one of our team has gone home and told her partner that she got her, you know, she got given this for working really hard.
Yeah.
You know, we sent them to the Carlisle Hotel for a night or just have fun. Or and you know, you get the message. I remember her boyfriend sending a message back saying, mate, thanks very much for, you know, looking after her. And I said, well, she's the one who did all the work. Yeah. You should be thanking her. And it's just really fun. That stuff's really cool.
It's, I think there's loads of different ways that you can reward staff. And I think all the stuff that I've read, it's all about, you know, it's just showing them that you appreciate the effort.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be extravagant things all the time. Just even saying, you know, thank you every now and then.
That's one of the things which I found is, I don't know if it's rewarding staff, but allowing the staff to take the piss out of you as well is quite rewarding. They love when I stuff up. They love it when I make a mistake. They love taking the piss out of me. And if that's all it takes, then
brilliant. I'm just going to think about where I read that in a book. That was one of the best ways of building relationships with people is admitting your fallibilities, admitting that you've done something wrong, or that you're not very good at something, or that you've cocked up.
It's kind of hard for me to hide that, though. I'm pretty good at stuffing up. So when you see us walk around the office, it's a bit of a common theme, but it's fun. And it just breaks the ice, and everyone makes mistakes. It's just,
The next kind of things I wanted to ask you about was health tech in general.
Mm.
So I mentioned to you before we started, I did an interview a couple of weeks back with a guy called Peter Brad, who's labelled as the one of the top 10 people in tech in Australia. Very, very innovative, educated guy, founded Fishburners, Australian startup Oz, whichever way around that is. And I was saying to him, we were talking about innovation and startups in Australia, or generally in the world, about how we potentially moved on from this era where two people in a bedroom could create something that could then turn into this global movement, i.e. Facebook or something like that, or the guys that created Stripe or the Atlassian guys or all those kind of things. He disagrees with that. But one of the things that he talked about was he felt the health space and the health tech space was still absolutely ripe for innovation and ideas and things like that. Mm. Do you see a lot of that? I mean, obviously, you know, being in that space, do you see a lot of opportunity in that area?
In Australia?
Generally, everywhere.
Yeah, globally, absolutely.
Right.
I think... And the ideas and the creation of minimum viable products and the just the general capability of young folks these days, this could quite easily come out of Australia.
Right.
Trying to commercialize it in Australia is quite complicated.
Yeah.
And that I know that people bristle when I say that, but if you just look at the fundamentals of that, the sector, particularly in hospitals.
Right.
We've got, as a rule, a monopoly sector. If you take away the private hospital system, of which they're very limited in regard to tertiary institutions. In fact, there's no tertiary hospitals that are purely public, as far as I can tell. So what you have is monopoly by state.
Yeah.
So the general concept of if you have a monopoly industry, you don't have innovation or you don't have incentive to innovate.
Right.
So at a macro level, it's very difficult to then bring new innovation in and to disrupt.
Yeah.
And that's at a general macro level. But then you think about the individuals inside of those organizations, what's their incentive to innovate?
Right.
It's just not as great as it is, as you see the competitive nature of health in the US, or even the requirement to innovate in poorer countries. Well, they have no other option.
Yeah.
So we're sort of, in some respects, we've got it too good here.
Yeah.
To commercialise great ideas in Australia. I would argue we're more risk averse here.
Yeah. Where do you see that innovation, I mean, in the healthcare space? I mean, the new Apple Watch has all those... Yeah. I can't speak with it. I know it's got a lot of, it's FDA approved, isn't it, or something in the US?
Some elements of it. I think the heart rate monitor.
The heart rate monitor. FDA,
not necessarily approved, but I think they're allowing it to be some form of clinical decision support, bit of data.
Do you think there's, I guess probably where I'm going with this is to sort of say, do you see a bigger role for things like artificial intelligence in the health space in the next sort of 5-10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody does. I think it's past where people are saying no. I think now even the naysayers are saying, let's be cautious, but yes.
Yeah.
So I do believe it. I think the Apple revolution is as much about hardware and being hardware in everybody's hand as it is about the software.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get the software there eventually, and I think that everybody will win as a result.
The last question I've got before we go into the final questions, you've been about a bit, but I didn't want to make it sound, that sounds a terrible thing to say. The people that you've met on your journey, who inspires you? Who are people that you've met that you go, that you've learned a lot from? And the second part of that question is, where do you go to get your own personal development? Do you read books? Do you watch videos? What do you do?
Gosh, inspiring. I don't know that I'd call them mentors, but I had a couple of people early in my late 20s when I was in Brazil, where they just gave me really direct feedback about the shitty things I did, my attitude at a time when life was good. They were just, punch in the face, direct honesty around. Yeah. The way I was doing things. And that really flipped the switch for me to going from being a cruiser just to this is to really make a decision that I wanted to be good and wanted to be the best I could be. So I think I had probably two or three of those. Yeah. He was a German guy that was down in Brazil, and I still remember his face. Then along the way, I think I've just picked up bits and pieces from people. I'm a bit of an introvert, so I don't really meet a lot of extroverts, if that makes sense. I've got mates that I bounce ideas off and probably only take in 10% of what they're saying, but I sort of build around that.
Yeah.
I do love certain types of brands. Like, I know it's not cool to say I love Uber anymore because of the shortfalls from a management point of view, but I love the concept of what they've done and what they've tried to achieve, which for me was really around a better user experience and just fighting until.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's good. Obviously, Apple has been doing that for years.
Yeah.
I love all sports. So I loved Under Armour when it came to town because it just did things differently and rocked the boat of two really big, Adidas and Nike. So I don't know. That's around the retail space.
Do you read much or do you...
Oh, I've read every Jack Reacher book that's ever been printed. Because I fly a lot, I just read a lot of that sort of crappy books and watch as many crappy movies as I can.
I was going to say, Jack Reacher, Tom Cruise, they're going to replace him, aren't they?
In the TV show. Jack Reacher in the book is 6'4" and built like a brick shit house, and Tom Cruise wears high heels.
Okay, last few questions. Your biggest role that I saw on LinkedIn was the coach of the Toowong under-10s, was it girls football team?
With a negative connotation, mate? Is that
which bit, the under-10s, the Toowong or the girls?
All three.
No, I didn't. Not at all. I can imagine it is it's chaos personified managing a young team. How do you get them motivated? How What's the? I mean, that's got to be black or white. That is getting them mobile.
And it's funny now that you ask. I've never been asked that question before, but it's taking the piss out of myself constantly.
Right. Okay,
I'm constantly doing it, and I train with them, so that's my form. I get a bit of exercise in doing that.
Yeah.
I would almost go to the point of offensively blunt with these young girls because often they're just being told how beautiful they all are and how great they all are. So I'm the first, you know, I'll say, Camilla, that's shit. That's the worst pass I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And, you know, the parents are looking going, what's this guy doing?
I was going to say, you're not having parents coming on the park. And
by the end of the season, the parents are coming up and saying, you know, thank you, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, yes, I probably pissed off a few parents over the years. But the bottom line is I think the kids love to be treated honestly and with respect. And if they do something wrong, you know, they're more than happy to be, you know, reprimanded, and if they do something right, they're more than happy to be rewarded. And
I've got to say, there's a Ray Dalio, famous investor in the US. He wrote a book that he released earlier this year, and his whole organization was built on this. I can't remember, he's got a specific term for it, but it's complete honesty.
Yeah,
it's expected in the upwards direction as much as it's expected in the downwards direction.
Yeah.
And that's how they've, and he goes, a lot of people struggle with that. They can't, you know, they lose people quite quickly who can't adjust to the fact that someone is calling them out and telling them not just the bad things, but the good things as well.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting that if you can do that and you can build a culture around it, it's a very strong culture.
It is. And it does, from time to time, it backfires or it becomes too blunt. And that's probably my biggest weakness is that, I sometimes won't read those signals that it's probably not the time to be a bit too direct.
There's another lady who was big in she did the female Viagra, and I can't remember the name of that product, but she started that company.
Right.
And one of the things she did was with all of her management team and everything, she gave them all nicknames on day one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and not disparaging nicknames, but not exactly like, you know,
yeah.
And that's what they were to be known as,
yeah.
you know, from then on in, because it just broke down the barriers between everyone. Yeah. There. So, look, you've mentioned some of the brands that you like. Last three questions, you mentioned some of the brands you like. Are there any others that you kind of look at that you just go, you admire the way that they do business?
I admire their products. Right. I admire the way they do business.
Let's go back then. Products that you admire.
I'd love to drive a Tesla one day. I don't know how you test drive one, but if I drive my shitty old Toyota and so I wouldn't mind a test drive, they may not be so keen to give me one because I might disappear. I like watches, but again, I like, I'll wait until I can...
Fit a
watch properly, so to speak. But that's about it. I'm a mad mountain biker, so the more expensive mountain bike that floats in front of me, the more I like.
What are the big brands in mountain biking?
I ride a Trek, but the big ones are names that these days are, you know, made by hand by some Swedish backpacker or something like it. But I just love the equipment on them, the machinery around the, you know, suspension and the gears and these days. I haven't ridden an electronic mountain bike yet. But I like all that sort of stuff as well.
I was going to say that's becoming quite a big thing, that real sort of customized built bikes. You see a lot of motorbikes doing that these days.
Yeah. Yeah,
since Keanu Reeves or something's got a company
that startup.
Yeah, that just builds them from...
No, I buy them off the rack. I'm straight off the rack, but I do like to look at them. Yeah.
Second to last question. What's next for you, 2019, Dose Me?
Yep.
What have you guys got coming up next year?
Well, this year, 2018, was a year to take to sort of open new markets up, and we're now in six continents. So next year is around, I suppose, solidifying our position.
Yep.
And I think now that we're in so many countries, the question is which countries can we win in quickly? Yeah. So we'll obviously US is our mainstay. It's just a huge opportunity for us and a very swift uptake. Like we've grown, 20-fold in the last 9 months in the US alone. And really just picking the winners in Europe as well. We've got some early adoption in Portugal, which is an interesting single payer model, but they need help. Germany's starting to take off. The northern European countries are always interested in things that save lives. So I would say that it's probably starting to look into Europe and just continue to invest in the US.
Have you got a customer in a country that you just like look at and just go, how did they even find?
Well, our first European customer is in Slovenia.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
And in fact, that we love our Slovenian customer. They're great. And I actually went to Slovenia, which fortunately it's next door, and I know you wouldn't know where, although you are from the UK, so you wouldn't know. It borders with Italy.
Right.
So, I was fortunate enough to take my wife with me, who she stayed in Milan while I drove the 8 hours through sleeting Eastern European highways. And I know Slovenia is not Eastern Europe, but at the time it felt like it was. But that was terrific. That was in Maribor, in the middle of, it's very northeastern Slovenia. Yeah. And that's our probably most exotic.
How did they find you?
Like most in the first few years, it was all inbound leads. Right. We didn't have any sales capability. So they were looking for a solution and they found us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Last question. How do people get in contact with you if they want to ask you a question or they need a football team coached or something?
Wait, they should just ring you personally.
don't say my phone
number. No, I'm on LinkedIn. I probably look at LinkedIn once a week or so. Yeah. I'm not the most active social media player out there. I know I should be better. Or they can just send me an email at ccornish@dosme.com.au.
Cool. Awesome. Mate, thank you very much for your time today. Pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure. And looking forward to, all the success in 2019.
Well, before you go, congratulations on having your
second bubble. Well, I was going to say, I from everything Giles said here about unexpected presence, I did get one today. So full disclosure to everybody listening in that the new seven-day-old baby now has some nice new clothing items, which his mother passes on her thanks as well. So, anyway, once again, thanks for today.